places, everyone. Quiet on the set. Curtains in five.
Hello and welcome to Footlights, a community theater podcast coming to you from the studios of WVIK Radio on the campus of Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. I'm Chris Hicks, and we are recording today on November 1st. My guest today is a very talented bootlegger at Circa 21 Theater and recent Ursula in Countryside Community Theater's production of Disney's Little Mermaid. Welcome, Nick Munson.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, I assure you. Well, let's start out with some background. Tell me about how you got started in theater. Anything personal you want to tell me.
How my first start in theater was my sister was in a production of Annie at Music Guild. I think it was either 2000 or 2001. And my intro to theater was actually doing tech theater backstage, running the backstage, until finally I got up enough nerve to finally be like, no, I want to be on stage.
And that production was that you auditioned for?
The first one I auditioned for and got into was Fiddler on the Roof at Music Guild. And I got to be one of the bad guys that destroyed the wedding. And it was a lot of fun to hear the audience reaction because people were shocked.
The bad guys are always the most fun.
The best parts. I've learned playing the villain is the most fun.
Now, we were chatting before we got started here, and you told me that you got started in vocal
with the Moline Boys Choir. I believe it was third grade when I started because my Nana took me. She knew I liked to sing. She heard me sing in church. She knew I was good. I was too shy to do it, but she forced me to audition, and I'm very thankful that she did because it led to my life now, and singing is what I love to do most, and I think I annoy most of the other bootleggers because I sing all the time, nonstop, even when we're not on stage.
Okay. Well, that was vocal choir. Mm-hmm. When did you get started? How young were you when you got started in theater?
In theater, I believe that would have been 12 or 13, and that would have been my 8th grade year. I did backstage 7th grade year. 8th grade, I was in Guys and Dolls, and that was at Wilson Middle School in Moline, Illinois. I played Liverlips Louie.
Oh, what a cool character name.
It was fun to play the big tough guy with the suit, and we all walked around like we were super duper tough.
Were you always, you're a big guy.
Oh yes, always. Been the tallest, the biggest, broadest.
I can see why you got cast then.
Yes. And that's when I was still playing football, so I was the big guy.
I'm going to jump ahead now. You'll find that I skip all over, so beware. As I said, you were just Ursula in this summer's production at Countryside. How did you get, what attracted you to that part?
What attracted me to that part? Ursula has always been, I think, my favorite Disney villain. And I've always been drawn to her. I have her tattooed on my arm.
Oh, really?
Let me see. I have, it's not her full her, but it's tentacles.
Oh.
And it's to
take my word for it. It's really cool.
To represent Ursula. Just bigger than life. Pat Carroll, just her performance in that was just,
is it
awe-inspiring to
typical
me.
For a male to play the part?
Disney's rights is that the part is, Alan Menken wrote it for a man. Uh-huh. Disney cast Pat Carroll. And for the musicals now, is it can be played by a man, but it must be female presenting, which is why I had no beard and shaved. So it can be played by a man. The original writer wants it to be played by a man. But if it is played by a man, you must at least paint like a female, look like a female.
And you did.
Thank you.
To the nth degree.
Corset helped. The corset helped.
And I loved the makeup, too.
Thank you. That was my own design.
So let's go back to school, eighth grade. What did you do? Now, you grew up in the Quad Cities?
Yes, grew up in Moline, Illinois.
Okay, so you went to Moline High.
Yes.
Were you in theater there?
Yes, I was. I did a lot under Ron May. He was also my choir teacher in high school. I started off, I think my first show was Phantom of the Opera my freshman year. Oh, or no, part? Just Phantom, not Phantom of the Opera. Just background. I got to be one of the policemen that shot the Phantom. And then was Charlie in the Chocolate Factory. I was the knife grinder in the quartet part. Knives, knives to grind, any knives to grind.
And he sings for us too. Great.
Then was Little Shop of Horrors, and I played the dentist. I was in senior year was The King and I played Fra Alok, who is kind of like a tertiary character, comes in out. He's the one that brings Lunta in. He's like the king's...
Another taking advantage of your muscular build.
Correct.
Yes. Okay. So did you go to college?
I went to Monmouth College in Monmouth, Illinois.
Oh, okay. And did you study theater there?
Yes. I started off science education, and then the first show of the first of my freshman year, the first show out, I auditioned for and got the lead, and I was very lucky. I was Officer Lockstock in Urinetown, and it was the best time, and all the professors were like, what are you doing in the education department? You belong over here. And I was like, you're right, I do.
It was so hard to convince you.
No, I instantly jumped. I think I was only in education for one semester and then immediately switched to performance. And it was, Monmouth College spoiled us rotten. It's a gorgeous campus. The theater was so fun. We got to do such edgy scripts. We had, like, state-of-the-art technology to work with. They trained us in everything from set construction, scenic painting, electrical, power tools, how to use vector, lighting, acting, singing. So it was very all-inclusive.
It always interests me. How did your parents take you being a theater major?
At first, I think they were a little iffy.
You'll never make a living.
Yes, definitely, definitely that. But I think that's what made me try even harder to make it work, to prove, like, no, I can do this and I will do this. And now my parents are very proud. I am definitely something they like to show off. Same thing with my Nana. they used to embarrass me terribly. They wanted me to sing for everybody. And when I was younger, I would just curl up and be like, Mom, no, please don't make me. But now I sing on a stage every single day.
And, you know, back when I was working for the Dispatch, I interviewed a bootlegger for one of the print editions that they did every year. And she told me, Jennifer somebody.
Dieb?
Yes.
Yes, I love her.
She told me that the bootleggers have to know the whole show.
Yes.
Because on any given night, somebody could be sick or whatever.
We learn every single solo and every dance. And we switch out usually every show, every night we're on to something different. Keeps it fresh for us, keeps it interesting. But also that way, if somebody's out, you can cover any part at any given notice. Or if something goes wrong in the pre-show, someone has to leave stage, you can step right up and just jump in on the part with just a moment's notice. You can just take it and take over. And the audience usually won't know.
Now, when you put together a pre-show, it's always thematically connected to the main stage show.
Yes.
There have been times I've observed that and I'm guessing this is why, because of having to step in at any given moment, the song does not seem to be compatible with that particular person's voice.
Which is something we do try to avoid. And usually you'll have songs that are like on your no list. Like I will do every song but this one because like as a bass, I don't want to do the soprano songs because those are not going to work for me.
Right.
Sometimes if it can't be covered, it has to happen. Then I'll modulate down or an octave, which sometimes doesn't always work with the track. But that is something we try to avoid. And different bootleggers direct different pre-shows, so it's also the person in charge of the pre-show at that time deciding if who they like on said songs.
How do you go about choosing the songs in the pre-show?
I have only ever directed two pre-shows, and what I have done is...
Is it the director that chooses?
Correct.
Okay.
And you don't have to. You can still create a pre-show and not direct it, but usually everyone that creates it does direct the pre-show. And I go about it. I create like this giant pre-show that's way too long. And then we have to, I pick down and be like, okay, who likes what? And then we start paring down from there. And I ask a lot. Brad Hoskins, our head bootlegger, he has lots of experience directing pre-shows. And I go to him a lot. Mm-hmm. And now we have Micah Santamore-Bernas and Kelsey Ford, who are in charge of the pre-show now, and they write the tracks. And they also gave me a lot of assistance of what they think sounds better, and they help me know what song sounds better going into the next song. And that also is how I choose
what songs to use. I didn't even think about that aspect.
What songs are in the same key, or if I can change the key to make them flow right into one another.
Has there been a show where it's been a main stage show, mm-hmm. that it's been hard to find music for the pre-show?
Ooh, like for Christmas right now, the Christmas pre-shows are usually hard because you want to avoid the songs that are already in the show.
Right.
And some Christmas shows have a lot of Christmas music in it. So then you're like, what do we do? Like last year, we did a Christmas pre-show and where we took actual pop songs but changed the lyrics a bit to be about Christmas instead of actually doing Christmas songs because the show incorporated a lot. And then there's also where, I don't know how to say, where we try to make up a different idea. So it's still like the show, but a little different, give them something a little interesting. Or when it's a straight play, I think those pre-shows, because then it's trying to find
songs that fit.
I think so.
Uh-huh.
I haven't had to write those pre-shows yet.
So. I was just trying to think back. Was it something All-American President? It was that show about the guy who was. The politician show. I was trying to remember if that was.
We did that with the pre-show. The theme of that was like America.
Right.
I'm sorry, I forget the name of that show right now. But the pre-show I do remember is all songs about America.
Well, in addition to the show being great, I thought it was one of the best sets I've seen there.
Oh, yeah.
Although tippy top right now is the Addams Family.
That
is an amazing set. And so big, and it flies in stuff and whirls around and everything. It's just great.
And what's fun, a lot of times in the pre-show, they do not want us to get on the set because they don't want to ruin any surprises from the show. But the pre-show for Adam's Family, we got to use the set a little bit, which is a lot of fun because that's something the bootleggers don't get to do usually.
Now, their opening Miracle on 45th Street. 34th Street. Opening next week?
Next week. Staff previews Tuesday, public previews Wednesday.
Okay, squirrel. one of the questions I had for pre-show was, how long do you get to rehearse?
Usually, we get the same amount of rehearsal as the main stage actors, and it's about 2 weeks. Sometimes it's a little less than 2 weeks.
And the main stage only gets 2 weeks? You mean on stage? No,
all together. Yeah, they come in. You get about 2 weeks. If it's a musical, a big musical, it's like 2 full weeks. If it's a play, not a musical, it might be closer to a week or a week and a half of rehearsal.
That's even worse than Genesius Guild.
But like a lot of time, the actors come in. You're given their script ahead of time. You're expected to be memorized when you come in, so you're getting the blocking. But hopefully, you know your lines and your music. But they'll still teach and tweak, but you're expected to be memorized when you come in.
Now I have even more admiration. Because I used to think that Genesius Guild was the worst because we had 2 weeks to do Shakespeare.
I've only done Shakespeare once, and it is an undertaking.
Oh, wow. And I know from a prior podcast with Brett Hitchcock, mm-hmm. that sets are built off and brought on. How does that affect rehearsal?
Well, we have in where the sets are built, there's a whole setup just that's a sister stage to our stage. So it's the same dimensions and they build the set over there. And rehearsals can also happen over there and a lot of times do.
Okay.
So they're rehearsing on the set as it's being built. And then it comes apart like Lego pieces, ship it over to Circa on trucks, and it comes through our back door, and they put it back together like Lego pieces. So the actors have already seen it, been on it, but just in another space.
Yeah.
And then it comes over.
Because I was thinking if they were rehearsing, it's so different when you get a set.
So it may not look exactly the same, or they'll have like stand-ins for like the tables and stuff that are very close to the dimension but might change when it comes over, or they're on the set and it's just not painted yet. And okay. It gets painted when it comes over here.
Okay, folks, now you know why professional actors are pros.
And, but yeah, sometimes, like in the winter months, they may not rehearse over at the space because it gets a little cold. Right now, the weather's been gorgeous, so we've been able to be over there. And
then do the bootleggers rehearse over there as well?
When the bootleggers do their full musical productions, it's every 2 years we get our own show. We rehearse over there for them, but usually we either rehearse in the salon at Circa or over at the speakeasy. When there's nothing in the speakeasy, we'll use that as our rehearsal space because our rehearsals go on at the same exact time as the main stage rehearsals. So we're always kind of moving puzzle pieces to see who can be in what room at what time. And
wow, you guys are great then. That adaptation is... One winter, Genesius Guild did a show where it was Murder in the Cathedral about Beckett. And we took it out to churches to perform because it was originally supposed to be in a church. And that was difficult adapting to different church spaces because we did... one was Presbyterian, one was a Baptist, one was a Catholic, ironically, the Catholic Church was a post-Vatican II, so it looked nothing like a cathedral, but it was difficult. It was really difficult, so I really admire that of the Circa people. So going back in time again, you were in theater at high school, and so... You said you can make a living as a theater person.
Correct.
You told mom and dad you could do that.
Yes.
So is it the bootlegger, or have you been in any regional theater where you've been a pro?
I have been to Turkeyville, but it's Cornwell's Dinner Theater.
Turkeyville? What's that?
Yeah, it is. It's a giant. So there's like an RV camp. There's a campsite. There's like a swimming area. And then there's also a theater. And then there's a big dining area. And then there's like a big museum and a huge candy country store.
And where?
And this is in, Marshall, Michigan.
Oh.
Yeah, and that is the one time. I've been mainly at Circa for 12 years, and then one of my friends suggested, well, why don't you audition for this? And I did, and I went and I played a Sister Mary Hubert in Nonsense Amen.
And I hate to tell you this, but when I was in Catholic school, I had a Sister Mary Huberta.
Hopefully she was nicer than the character I played.
The jury is out.
Sister Mary Hubert was... laid the law down.
Yes, Sister Mary Huberta did as well. Okay, on to more exciting things. Anything else other than that? Do you have aspirations to do?
Oh, I would love to. Right now, being a bootlegger and making tips is what helps me afford my student loans, and I still have 3 years left of those. And once my student loans are all paid off, We'll probably go back to traveling a lot in my younger years with the boys choir and other choirs I was in. I got to tour all over the U.S. and tour Scotland and Spain. And
ooh.
I liked the tour bus life. A lot of people don't. I enjoyed it a lot. And it's something I would like to go on another national or international tour sometime in the future. But I have some student loans to pay off first, and then I will go.
Oh, I know. Too bad. Too bad. Okay. What role do you aspire to? If you could play any role.
I've been very lucky. I've gotten to play two of my biggest dream roles. And so I think I would like to play them again. And that was Sweeney Todd in Sweeney Todd. That was one of the best
experiences. I've never seen that show.
Sondheim writes some jarring music, and you either really like the way Sondheim writes or you don't like the Sondheim writes.
Oh, yeah, Sondheim.
I do, but a lot of the music is jarring, and there's a steam whistle, like a train steam whistle, that's in the score. And so it plays, and it's loud, and it screeches, makes people jump out of your seats. But that's kind of the point of the show, is to make you uncomfortable.
Hmm.
And then again, I got to play Ursula this summer, and I would love to do that
You'd
again.
You'd love to do that
I
again.
I would love to play Ursula again. And I'm trying to think who
Even,
else.
You know, actually, Ursula is kind of one of the smaller parts in the show.
In the show.
But it's the biggest in the sense that you get to play it so big.
Mm-hmm. Just larger than life. And one of the best parts about that show is Ursula gets to come through the audience in this version we did. And when the children saw me coming, before I even made a sound, started shrieking, screaming, hiding behind their parents.
Oh.
And that's when you play a villain, that's where you're like, oh, I've done it right. If they're afraid of me already, like, this is good.
Do you know whether it's, I don't know if typical is the right word, for the cast to go out in the audience like you did at Countryside? Because I had a little girl sitting in front of me. And when, it might have been you, danced with her, that little kid was over the moon.
Oh.
Over the moon. And I just wondered if that's, like you said, Disney has parameters mm-hmm. within which you have to stay. Is that what they do with that everywhere?
It depends on the director. It depends on the type of theater and if there's room for actors. But a lot of shows, especially like bigger musicals, the shows like children come to, that's where I find you'll be more out in the audience more. They want you out in the audience. Like at Circa, I've done many children's shows at Circa. And it's more apt in the children's shows that you go out in the audience rather than like the more adult type shows. It's because of getting the kids, keeping their attention, getting them into the show, really liking it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, it all depends on the director too, I suppose, of where they want it. Because there are, again, main stage shows where they're out in the audience. Not a lot, but it does happen. But we have such big aisles at Circa that it can happen. But in other theaters, like Cornwell's, which is a little much smaller venue than Circa is, we would not go out in the audience because the seats are so
theater.
Tight.
At North Scott is just
immaculate.
It is immaculate now that you mention that. I don't know how old it is, but
not
it looks
very.
Brand new.
I think it is very.
I was so impressed with that. And
I walked in there for the first time.
The bubbles were just so cool.
And I saw them. I forget exactly what they're called, but they were specifically iridescent bubbles. And first time we saw them under lights, like every bubble was a different color. Like it was just so cool and pretty. And I'm backstage for that, but I happened to be in the audience the first time they tested it. And I was like, I want this for my scene, but bubbles aren't very evil.
And the cool thing about bubbles is it doesn't matter how old you are.
No.
Kids love it. No. The adults love it.
And
it was
we'd
such
be backstage
a great
and you'd know when the bubbles turned on because you just hear everyone go,
And because they come from behind, they're a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
It was so good. Have you ever, you said you directed Bootleggers. Have you ever directed any other shows?
Only in college.
And that was?
The show was called Am I Blue? And it was a one act. And I much prefer being on stage than directing. I find myself, when in the directorial seat, and the comment I got from my professors is I can't let the show go. I'm there watching it and I'm mouthing every word, like just in the moment. They're like, as a director, you're supposed to let go. And I have a problem with that.
Oh, I did not know that. And you know,
you eventually just have to wash your hands, step back, and let them take over.
Yeah. But that also, what you just described as mouthing the lines, I find that in a lot of our local venues, there is a serious lack of projection. Actors are not being taught to project.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of chalk that up a little bit to what you're saying, because the director knows the show so well that the director's brain is filling in what maybe the ears are not taking in. And I think it would behoove every director to have somebody totally unfamiliar with the show to come in one night and say, can't hear them.
At Circa, we have what we call the diction police.
Oh, really?
And it's usually the musical director, once like all the music's taught originally, will sit, listen, and watch, and they will point out specifically what lines, like, didn't hear that, didn't understand that. you should be hitting that T, not a D kind of situation. So we do have that at Circa.
Well, that's good, and that makes sense. And I agree with you, even not just spoken lines, but when I've gone to musicals at amateur venues, there are times when I can't understand.
Or if the music's so much louder than.
Yes, that has. Although, you know, I mentioned that in one of my reviews, and I noticed at Music Guild that that changed afterwards. So hopefully I made an
impact. Yes, you want to hear the music, but we need to hear the words.
Exactly.
That's another thing. If they're so familiar with it, then they like, oh, I know what they're saying. Mm-hmm. Well, the audience.
And often, I mean, you know, like at Music Guild, they do popular musicals, and people that are really into musical theater probably have the albums at home and listen to them. I am not. I enjoy musicals, but I don't listen to music at home at all.
One thing that a lot of the other musical theater performers find me weird is I don't like listening to musical theater outside of work. I love performing it. I love being on stage, but I'm listening to like rock pop music in the car. I'm not going to be listening to Wicked in the car. But that's.
You know, that strikes me. I just had a throwback to when I was a teenager and I was babysitting. This one family that I babysat for had a lot of albums of musicals, and I played them when I was babysitting. Mm-hmm. So I can do Carousel pretty well.
It's a show I've never done.
That hasn't been done by anyone in a very
long time.
That's something Music Guild needs to consider. You know, what else was the one I was going to try to get Jake Ladd to do? I can't remember now, but it's another musical that hasn't been done for ages, and I think could be.
I want all the golden era musicals to come back, because that's what I'm trained to sound like. Ooh. That's hard. One show I've never been in would love to be South Pacific. I love the music in South Pacific, but that's my dad's favorite musical. My dad starred in South Pacific when he was younger. I grew up listening to that one a lot.
So he wasn't more supportive of you going into theater?
Well, he did it in high school. It wasn't like his profession.
Oh, okay.
But both my parents can actually sing, though my mother will tell you she cannot carry a tune, but she actually has quite a lovely voice. But she, like me when I was younger, would not sing in front of anybody.
Yeah.
But she sang to us every morning to wake us up.
Oh, how sweet.
Very, my mother's the best.
Aw, I wish my son would say that about me, but oh well. Tell me, what does community theater mean to you? Because you're in a professional setting, but it's still community theater.
I grew up at Music Guild. I did.
You did?
Yes, I did. Like I started, I think like it was 2001, and I did many shows there in high school. Like I spent every second I wasn't at school at Music Guild pretty much. And community theater to me is, and I only can speak on Music Guild because I was mainly on that one. I've done Countryside the once. It's like family there. Like it's your safe space. As a kid, that's where I wanted to go because that's where everyone was just like me. That's where all the kids were like me. We got along. The cast parties were so fun. You get to experience a lot more, and you get to do maybe different shows that, like, professional theaters may not get to do because sometimes it's hard to get rights to certain shows people want to see because it's touring.
Were there other have you experienced any other boys choir people transitioning to Music Guild?
Ooh. Yes. Some of my friends, one of my best friends still to this day, Alex, he was in the boys choir with me. He was a year younger than me in it.
I bet he still is.
Actually, I think he's older than me, but how it worked out with auditioning. Yes, him and I did many, many shows. I think there was a good amount of other Moline boys choir people. A lot of them are my age in my group. I didn't see, but a lot of other were around.
It seems like it would be a natural
transition,
that want to stay with vocal music, because we don't have an adult choir other than
the Nova
singers. Have you ever tried to sing with them?
I haven't, but I have a lot of friends that do.
Ah.
I went to Circa pretty much right away, and so Circa, love it. I've been there for 12 years, obviously. I enjoy it. But it takes up a lot of time, so I don't have time for other things, like doing the show at Countryside.
I love that they're acapella.
I miss doing hard music like they get to do. That was some of my favorite choral singing in a chorale or choir in college, with singing like Eric Whitaker songs. Just, I miss the difficult music with the tight harmonies was my favorite. And musical theater has that, but not quite like choir music does.
So why don't you audition?
Again, because I would have to take too much time off work to do that.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where it comes. If you make theater,
your money-making stuff is such a bummer.
I made theater my profession, so now it's no longer my hobby, kind of.
So 3 years from now, I have great things to look forward to.
Fingers crossed.
Well, I can't see how you wouldn't be cast. I mean, you just have such a big presence on stage.
Thank you.
And I love the songs you do in the pre-show, so of course you'll succeed.
Appreciate that.
Of course. Well, it's Friday night. I don't have anything else to do. And you know, from living in the Quad Cities, we have boatloads of stuff to do. And it always irritates me when somebody from the Quad City says, oh, I don't want to live there. There's nothing to do. And my son is one of them. And I think we have gobs.
So
I mean,
much.
We have so many theaters.
I was that
now.
Teenager. I'm like, I want out of the Quad Cities. Well, yeah. I got out of the Quad Cities and I went on tour and I saw other places. I was like, well, the Quad Cities really is not that bad. And now that I'm older, I'm like, I really enjoy living back in the Quad Cities. There is always something to do.
There's some, especially in the summer with all the
festivals, music,
and stuff.
Bands everywhere. Pretty
so, much. It's Friday night. I don't have anything else to do. Why should I go to community theater?
Because everyone there wants to be there. Everyone on stage is having the best time of their life, and I think it's contagious. Like, you can tell how much fun they're having, and because they're having a good time, I feel like that's going to make you have a good time, because it's the energy is contagious. Just the smiles, the energy, the lights, the color. And it's a great place. Like, I love performing, and anytime there's, like, children around, just making them fall in love with the magic of theater, too, or watching them, somebody's show for the first time is the best feeling, like, seeing a kid love it.
I agree with you on that. The first time we took our little, I call them our foster grandchildren, because we don't have any. Mm. I stole them from another grandparent. The look on their face took them to Davenport Junior Theater. And that was their first live theater. And the look on their face as they saw, as you said, the magic. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to compare with that. Nothing at all.
Thinking about Circa, because there's been so many little girls come in dressed up as Wednesday Addams. And just watching them watch the show is just darling. And at the end, they just like so badly want to meet everybody.
That is the really cool thing about the Addams Family. It appeals to all age levels.
Mm-hmm. Got some for everybody.
There's nothing in there that they wouldn't understand because they, you know, they make a reference to something that's in the adult world, and I don't mean anything obscene or anything like that. Mm-mm. But just it's just above their intellectual level, and the Addams Family is just perfect.
Uh huh.
And I want to bring the girls for their Christmas present to Junie B. Jones. So I want to talk
Jingle
to you.
Bells,
after
Batman
we're off
smells.
Air, I want to ask a question if you can tell me what it is. The answer is, but I won't bore our podcast people with it. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Not that I can think of.
Is there anything in the Quad City theater scene that you think we need or could be improved upon?
We have so many theaters, which I think is great. So we have almost every different style of theater, except for maybe Absurdist, but that's not everybody's cup of tea. So I think there's a lot. Most of my time of experience is like at community theaters, just the technical level needs a little bit help on the sounds and stuff, but microphones are very expensive. But usually, like, the talent's good. Everyone gets a chance, which I think is the best part about community theater, is everyone can have a chance. And my most experience lately going to see, like, I just was at the Black Box.
Dial M?
The one right before. Alex Richardson wrote it.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. The All-American Riot?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. And, like, we got, like, local writers are being able to put up shows. So I think we're doing a pretty good job. But maybe I'm missing something.
Alex Richardson wrote that. Mm-hmm. And he also had the show going on at the Sound Conservatory, The Tapes. That was a really interesting show. Did you get to see that?
I did not get to see that
one. Did you get
one.
To see Dial M?
I did not get to.
Oh. So All-American Riot, I think that opening night, there were a lot of Circa people there because...
It was Thursday.
Sydney directed. Sydney Dexter is Alec Richardson's wife.
Yes. Yes. If they do a show on a Thursday, we usually might get to go because usually we don't have a show on Thursday nights. And so it's really nice. And I'm so sorry. The Spotlight Theater, they also have welcomed Circa people on Thursdays that we can come see a preview night, which is very nice since, like I said, when I'm working, we don't get to see theater. If you do theater professionally, usually you don't get
That's
to
a
see
shame.
Theater.
That's
which is,
really a shame.
Because I would love to see all the shows. And I have friends in shows all the time. And usually I don't get to because I myself am on stage the same time they're on stage, just at different venues.
My personal... thing that I wish we could work around better in community theaters. So many of the theaters have shows going at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that their pool of actors gets stretched really thin.
Mm-hmm.
That has really terribly affected Genesis Guild in the summer. They have not had enough people come out to audition. And that's something I wish could be worked around better. So, A, it would give actors more chances at a variety of shows. But it would also, it's also easier on the audience. I mean, when you've got shows going on at the same time and you want to get to them. And yes, they go to weekends, but
sometimes
everybody has such a busy life nowadays that doesn't
then,
always
I remember, too, also being in community theater, being like, two weekends sometimes doesn't feel like enough. You're like, I want to do it more. But that also depends on paying for rights and all of that. But it would be nicer if they could, yeah. I don't know how we'd work that out. But yeah, all the shows always at the same time makes it difficult.
One last thing. This just popped into my head. I don't know if you know who Don Wooten is. He originated this station. And he was the founder of Genesis Guild in Rock Island, which is the theater that I was most affiliated with. And he had me on his show here at the station, which I forget the name of, Saturday Morning Live. And he said, which he was wrong in my case, said, every actor wants to have their own theater, wants to start their own theater. No. I can see on your face already that you agree with me.
My dad thinks that too. He's like, well, at this point, you've learned it all and you've worked pretty much every position at Circa and you've been doing theater for so long. Well, don't you just want to run your own theater? I was like, do you have any idea how stressful that is? I'm like, no, I might help someone run a theater.
He might think you've done everything, but not even close.
No, you're correct. Not even close to the bookkeeping and all that. But no, maybe help somebody run, be an assistant someday, but be the one fully in charge. That is a grand undertaking.
And a huge responsibility. And I'm sure both of us don't know half of what has to be done.
With the licensing and that world I do not know anything
about. And revenue
about.
And... Well, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to come on the
Absolutely.
Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And so that wraps it up for this episode. I'm Chris Hicks. Break a leg.
Thanks for listening to Footlights, a community theater podcast from the Quad Cities. Footlights is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you'd like to explore more podcasts from WVIK or support our work, you can do that at WVIK.org or by downloading the WVIK app.